Welcome to Unlapped. It's race week, just days away from the Australian Grand Prix in Melbourne. And look who's joining us. Two of them from down under. Lawrence Edmondson, of course, first, because he's been on the pod more often than not. Nate Saunders finally making his return all the way from Melbourne. How are you guys? Nate, it's good to see you finally.
Yeah, thanks very much. An unplanned absence from the pod. Doing all right. I think the jet lag is it's my first time in Melbourne. And everyone always says this race is an amazing one to do, but the jet lag's pretty grim, and I'm experiencing both of those things so far. So, we're Lawrence and I are joining a few other journalists later to play Paddle. I don't know if you've ever played that, Katie, or seen it. It's basically like it's a game that's taken all the bad bits of tennis and has added squash in, which is great. And we're hoping to play that later, and I think that's going to be good for us. I don't know, but we'll see.
Have you guys gotten into pickleball? That's like all the rage in America.
It's similar to that, I think. Pickleball, isn't it? I think the rackets are... Yeah, I think from what I understand, there's no walls in pickleball, is there? It's like around
just
the court.
Just a net. Mm-hmm.
Just a net. Okay, so this is pickleball with walls. That's what the slogan should be. If I was working for the pickle for the paddle HQ, I'd be like, pickleball with walls.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Laz, what time is it there right now?
It's just gone 7 a.m., and it really feels like it, if I'm honest. It's a weird thing. You come over here and you wake up several times through the night, and then just as you get into a nice rhythm of sleep, your alarm goes off and you have to get up. But it's 11-hour time shift from the UK, and that makes it a 15-hour time shift from the East Coast. Anyway, it's almost impossible to schedule meetings and podcasts and things like that. So yeah, we've gone for 7 a.m. I think it's 4 p.m. where you are, or just gone 4 p.m.?
Well, it's actually 1 p.m. because I'm in Pacific time zone right now because I'm covering some Warriors games for the NBA. So that's what, an 18-hour time difference between me?
Well, actually, it's easier for us just to go forward to you. Yeah. But then, yeah, like across the dateline, the wrong way.
Who's the day?
And also, Lawrence isn't saying the other hardest bit here is obviously because everything's upside down. It's just really difficult to do anything, you know. Like you're constantly, you know, don't worry about it. That joke was better when I did it to the mirror earlier. I was like, this will kill. This will go down well.
It's a Stranger's Things kind of a joke, yeah. And I liked it. I appreciated it. I'm curious if it's hard for you guys as journalists to adapt, right, and to get on to a decent time clock going to Melbourne. What's it like for the drivers? Do they actually go a few days earlier to acclimate sooner? Do they leave it to the, I don't know, 11th hour before that they arrive? How do they handle that?
I think most drivers head out here as early as they can, but it will depend a bit on sponsor commitments, all the other stuff they have to do in and around races, which is quite easy to forget. But yeah, I think most drivers will try and get to this one earlier than they will to most races. I remember Nico Rosberg in his championship winning season in 2016 said that he had conquered jet lag and he wouldn't tell anyone during the season what he'd done because he saw it as this kind of almost superpower that he had over Lewis Hamilton. And it turned out all he was doing, and I say all, it's actually quite a good strategy, is that each day ahead of a move from one time zone to another, he'd just move 1 hour or, if it was necessary, a couple of hours. So his alarm clock would get either later or earlier by an hour each day. And then by the time you move from one time zone 2 weeks before at one race to the next one, you gradually move your body clock into that time zone. And he swore by it. But most people who have normal jobs where you kind of still have to get up and go to work or join Zoom meetings or whatever, it's probably not going to be possible. So yeah, I mean, if you lived a glorified life of a Formula One driver, that's probably the way to do it. But I think most of them can't even be bothered to do it quite to that extent.
That's wild.
Yeah, I remember a lot of them struggled. I mean, Vegas was on another level from this one, just given with the weird time zones. Mm-hmm. But I remember talking to Ricardo at that race about how, and he said, Melbourne's the only one where the drivers all kind of, every year, they're like, next year it'll be better jet lag wise, we'll be better dealing with it. And then they get back there and it's like, yeah, no, it's the same. So I think even though they do this every season and they obviously have high performance coaches and stuff like that, it's still a human thing, isn't it? It's very, very difficult to quickly switch it around. And it's also, it what's really kind of makes this race and a lot of the flyaways quite unique is that that's also true of all the mechanics. You know, you've got a lot of the guys who probably feel the same as Lawrence and I right now. They'll be heading into the paddock soon and, you know, they'll start working on the cars this week and stuff. You know, that's a very high performance job. You know, there's a lot of, a lot of intensity there. So I can imagine that as the week goes on, that becomes quite exhausting. So yeah, a lot of tired eyes, I think, when you see people in Melbourne.
Do you think it'd be easier? I know obviously we have the Australian Grand Prix this weekend, and then I assume everybody kind of goes back home for a bit before they go out to Japan, which is April 6th weekend. Would it be easier to have those in back-to-back weekends, or no, you need that in-between week?
It's still a fair old distance to get everything from Australia up to Japan. It's kind of, yeah, on a line time zone, but there's a bit of a gap. But the reason they did that was kind of for that reason, that the freight could move more gradually around the world rather than having to be shifted from one side of the world back to the other and then out to Japan later in the year. So there's some logic to it in that regard. I mean, you can do what Nate and I are doing, which is going straight to Japan, which, you know, is one solution to it. But I think obviously a lot of people can't do that within their jobs in F1. So I agree, you know, there's some logic in that. When I first started in F1, Australia was very often the season opener, and Malaysia used to follow it. And that kind of made a certain amount of sense as two places to go to back to back. But trying to understand the logic of each Formula One calendar, you know, there's a little bit sprinkled in there, but there's a lot of absolute nonsense as well. So maybe that's a good idea for another year.
Yeah.
But, and each calendar, it's like they do seem to do something where they're like, this does make sense. But then you create a bunch of other problems every year. It's kind of like the mm-hmm. whack-a-mole. I don't know if that's the same yeah. name in the US, but you like hit it one is. And then three other pop up.
Another problem pops up.
Yeah. And I think that there's no real, because moving Japan up, you know, this end of the calendar, grouping these three together, you look at it and you're like, oh, that actually makes some sense. And then when people mm-hmm. realize that there's the flights back and forth, you start saying, okay, well, that's a bit silly. Especially, I mean, for people that are covering all three of those races, and like Lawrence said, can't do what we're doing and staying out, that's basically, you know, three trips back to Europe and then out to Asia again. You know, for what, 5 days at a time, 6 days at a time, which is pretty brutal, you know, for just, and then a week off and then Miami, you're going the other way,
mm-hmm.
you know, in terms of
just
time.
Seems like so
it's
much
a lot
wear
of,
and tear.
Yeah, exactly. So that, you know, you do start to wonder what impact that has on people. And I think that the teams are quite acutely aware of that now, you know, with all the size of the calendar and triple headers, et cetera. So it'll be interesting, I think, when we get to Miami to see, you know, how people are doing. They will have had time off, but it's just a lot of time on planes, a lot of time away from home as well. So I think that'll be quite a big talking point as we kind of get through this spell of races, definitely.
No, for sure. Well, lots, of course, to break down as we get ready for round three of the Formula One season. Remember, if you're watching this on YouTube, give us a like, leave a comment, and don't forget to subscribe to ESPN for more F1 content. And if you're listening, hit us with a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts, because we would really appreciate it. All right, let's take a look at things. The biggest storyline coming out of Jeddah was the incredible performance of Ollie Bearman. We obviously talked about that last week during the pod. Sainz is expected. He will be back. But what is, I guess, the protocol, Lawrence, in terms of him being clear to resume racing?
I'm not entirely sure when it comes down to something like appendicitis, but yeah, usually if a driver's been unwell or they've had a big accident, then they'll have to just pass an FIA test, see the FIA doctor, make sure that they're in a fit state to do so. I imagine he probably will be. He's traveled out to Australia, we know that much. It was pretty clear in Jeddah that he was very keen to get back in the car as soon as possible, because he limped his way into the paddock clearly in some discomfort, and into the Ferrari garage to watch Ollie Bearman drive his car in Jeddah. So yeah, I'm pretty sure he'll be back unless there's been any complications, but we haven't heard of any complications. I remember Alex Albon Mr. Race the Italian Grand Prix a couple of years ago, when Nyck de Vries mm-hmm. stood in for him, and he made a very swift recovery despite complications during his appendicitis surgery. So I suspect Carlos will be back, but of course they'll make sure that he's 100% fit to do so before he steps in a car.
When you guys look at this, obviously Red Bull has had a dominant start to the season with 2-1-2 finishes, as we all kind of expected. Sainz finished on the podium round one. Charles Leclerc finished on the podium in Jeddah. Do you feel like, Nate, that Ferrari is closing the gap on Red Bull, or too early to tell at this point?
I think too early to tell, but I think that the first two races gave a very strong indication that if there is a gap behind Ferrari, you know, it might be a small one to kind of the Mercedes, McLaren, Aston, etc. Mm-hmm. But I think Ferrari seemed quite comfortably, at least on the basis of two races, you know, to be that best, you know, the best of the rest. We used to use that word mm-hmm. all the time when Lewis and Mercedes were dominating. I think the interesting thing will be coming through this spell of races now. If Ferrari do keep these run of podiums going, the next natural step is, you know, if you're clearly established as the second best team, your next best step, your next step is, like you mentioned, Katie, is can we cut the gap forward? We'll start to see upgrades, etc. So quite a exciting time for those. I say exciting. It's not exciting in the sense that they're so far behind Red Bull, but the tantalizing kind of prospect of, you know, the next step, if you can be the second best team, the next logical step to aim for is to cut the gap into Red Bull. So it might be, I think it is still too early to say with Ferrari, but yeah, even with the signs missing Jeddah, like they came out of that weekend looking pretty strong still with Charles on the podium. So given everything around their season so far, there could have been a lot of negative noise coming out of it, but actually they look really strong. So I would back them to be on the podium again, or at least challenge this weekend.
To that point, how do you foresee, Lawrence, the SF24 faring in this circuit specifically as compared to maybe the Red Bulls?
So Melbourne's a bit of a funny circuit because I think most people always used to think of it as a low, medium speed circuit, but it's actually not. They made some changes a few years ago where a lot of the corners were kind of, the angles were taken out a bit, so it's quite high speed in a number of sections. And then the medium speed corners are actually pretty fast now just because of how fast these cars can go around corners, how much downforce they have on the car. So there will be some similarities to Jeddah, and I think that was a strength for the Ferrari, not necessarily relative to Red Bull, but relative to the main competition. But there is, again, to steal Nate's phrase, it is a little bit too early to tell. Ferrari, definitely compared to this time last year, have made a step compared to Red Bull. If you just look at the gaps, you know, at the end of the race, they made a step forward. Now, that might not be enough to make for a thrilling season. It might mean they win two or three races rather than one during a year. But it is a step, and if they can continue to build on that, then that's significant. I think the other thing that'll be interesting is to see whether some of the other teams have solved their issues. Mercedes is one that jumps to mind. They were really struggling in high speed corners. I saw a clip on, I think it was Instagram, on board with Lewis following Lando Norris through turns 6, 7, and 8 at Jeddah, which are really high speed corners. And the McLaren just disappears into the distance. And then Lewis makes up a lot of the time on the straights and a little bit in slow corners. But in those high-speed corners, the McLaren is just so, so quick. So I guess it's a circuit that McLaren will hope to be reasonably competitive at as well. It's just whether Mercedes can solve their issues. They've got some ideas, I think, coming out of Jeddah, but it's almost exactly what they didn't need just to have one of those races that felt a little bit like the last 2 years where there was just a clear issue with the car in certain types of corners.
Well, it just felt like there was so much optimism coming into the season for Mercedes that maybe they had kind of figured things out with the design. And then they've shown really nice pace, I feel like, specifically in practice sessions, but then in qualifying and then into your point, when they get into race day, they lose it. And so I find it so frustrating after so many, this is someone watching it as a spectator and somebody who covers the sport. I can't imagine how they feel actually in the cars, drivers, Toto Wolff, everybody in the team working so hard. I don't know. I just feel like it's another frustrating start for Mercedes, Nate.
Yeah. And obviously to cap all that off, they know that Lewis is leaving at the end of the year, which is kind of the double whammy of that. And I mean, I think everyone's tried to second guess and third guess and fourth guess Lewis's move. I don't know if those are phrases, but you know, I'm going to make them up because they sound good. But I think a lot of people are saying, what is he seeing about the Ferrari? What does he think about the Mercedes? But you know, the whole thing about Lewis moving, one of the reasons, you know, he wanted to move to Ferrari, obviously, but there was a felt like there was a fundamental lack of faith in Mercedes' ability to get back to where they used to be. And we kind of, to everything you said, there was this feeling coming into the off season. You know, I mean, even you know, Vegas time when we were saying if Mercedes just have a great winter, they can be right there with Red Bull, and they just feel like they're in no man's land again. So it's really remarkable. You know, you think about how our expectations about this team have slowly, gradually, just kind of drifted downwards from where they were. It was, you know, didn't go all the way down because I think everyone knows what a great team it is, what they can do. But yeah, I just don't think there's much going on there at the moment that, you know, would keep them happy. And the fact that they still haven't replaced Lewis, like everything about the team at the moment, it just seems to be in flux. And I think it's exactly the situation that someone like Toto Wolff must absolutely hate because he's such a perfectionist and a bit of a control freak for those things. And yet everything is kind of, there's a big question mark around everything, which is kind of the opposite of how Mercedes has worked, or at least, you know, how they did operate when they were dominating a few years ago.
Laz, you alluded to this. So there's expected design experiments maybe coming in Melbourne. What are your expectations for that and any tinkering that they could do to unlock some performance?
Yeah, so the issue they face at the moment is that in the wind tunnel and in their simulations, the downforce is there. So when they kind of run the car through, through the simulator, through CFD, this downforce exists. But then when they put it on track in real life, they can't find it. And often they have this very familiar issue to anyone who's followed Mercedes the last 2 years of bouncing, which is something they had a lot in 2022, where basically the car is running so low to the ground that it bottoms out, and then it kind of creates this this bouncing up and down suspension that is awful for the driver in the cockpit, and it's also bad for performance and bad for the amount of downforce cars generating. So that is an issue which they had in Jeddah. Now they had, you know, three practice sessions to try and solve it in Jeddah. They tried some various things. They tried running the car a bit higher, but it didn't work. So what they did get was a whole bunch of data, which they can now dig into. And so this theoretical downforce that exists, they can start to try and find it in reality again. But I'd be surprised if there's a huge amount that has changed on the car because of Jeddah. They'll have constant upgrades coming to the car, but whether they'll be able to find something immediately from that in terms of a physical car upgrade, it's very unlikely. But you never know. Sometimes it is just small little tweaks, small things, you know, to manage the airflow under the car and maybe get the car run a little bit better on the suspension. They've completely changed the rear suspension. They've got this quite novel approach with the front suspension, where they've got different kind of points that they can set it to on the car where it literally picks up into the car. So could be, you know, things they can tinker with and change and basically run as experiments during the free practice sessions ahead of qualifying in Melbourne. But it's not where they want to be, because you don't want to be learning on the job at this point, because every other team, Red Bull especially, seems to have hit the ground running. Ferrari have obviously done a decent job. McLaren, like I said, it's almost like the reverse of the Mercedes. It's incredibly good in high speed corners and then still struggling a bit in low speed stuff. So Melbourne's a good opportunity for them to try and understand it. It's not guaranteed that they will find a solution immediately. Having said that, goes some other types of circuits. Suzuka's not one of them, by the way. That's the next track. That's another high-speed circuit. But it goes some other types of circuit like Monaco, and perhaps that car could actually be pretty competitive, because, like you said, we saw in Friday practice in Melbourne, the car looks very, very good. Friday practice in Bahrain. And in testing in Bahrain, the drivers were quite happy with it. So it seems like there's some potential in there. It's just unlocking the full thing that they need to do.
Passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has got you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
You mentioned not being where you want to be. Well, this time last year, a team that was not where they wanted to be was McLaren, obviously. Now they've had a much better start to the season. You know, Oscar Piastri is racing in his home Grand Prix for the second time. Much better car, so he can possibly fight for podiums, coming off a fourth place finish in Jeddah. Do you think that this is a race, Nate, that the McLarens and specifically Oscar Piastri could finish P3? Maybe above, but I'm not counting it out. But I'm also hedging my bets for Red Bull.
Yeah, I think that at the moment, you know, it's just so difficult to predict, you know, to put anyone, certainly in P1 ahead of Max. Mm-hmm. Perez seems to have his, you know, his act together a bit better this year. But yeah, I'm actually quite excited for McLaren this weekend. I think the Piastri, it's always nice when a driver has a chance at their home race. You know, it's just always a nice feel good story. And I'm actually really impressed with Piastri. You know, he was great last season, and yeah, he had a great race in Jeddah. And I think that there's so much pressure at McLaren on Lando. I don't think there's really any on Piastri. And I think that that's actually one of the storylines I've been trying to, you know, just keep an eye on this season, because everybody thinks, myself included, Lando has to get a race win, you know, this year or next year, just to get rid of that. I think he may have already surpassed the amount of race wins without a victory, or no, the amount of podiums he's had without a win. I think it's now a record, or one more away from a record. So he's in really kind of awkward territory when it comes to records. Piastri is just kind of out there driving and just enjoying himself. And I think that a strong weekend this weekend, it doesn't even have to be a podium, I think really sets his season up really, really nicely, because yeah, I think he's got the chance this year to do what he couldn't last year, which is exactly as your point. Last year they were in an awful place last year. We didn't really think they were going to do anything until that Austria upgrade. This year, like Lawrence said earlier, they've kind of hit the ground running a lot sooner. Mm-hmm. And I think actually Piastri, you know, we saw glimpses, you know, peaks with him last year. I think if he can get a strong run of results going, I think that whole situation at McLaren is just really interesting to watch, because Norris can be harder on himself. And I think that actually a lot of us, we love a tight teammate battle. So to answer your question in a very long-winded way, I do think he can get a podium, and I'm hoping he can, because I think it will make quite a riveting situation to monitor at McLaren. You know, not on top of the fact they've got a good car, but having two good teammates sometimes is a problem. Sometimes maybe a good problem to have, but sometimes becomes a bit of a headache for a team to manage. So, but also to shout out to Lando. He's the kind of guy, he has a rough week or, you know, not so good week. And he always tries to, you know, you always back him to come back strong. So I think all together there, if there's anybody challenging Ferrari for that podium, I'd put McLaren up there.
Well, Daniel Ricciardo is also going to be racing in his home country as well. First time since 2022, obviously, because he wasn't on the grid a season ago until, I don't know, past the halfway point. But he sounds, I think, pretty motivated to get back on track after what's been kind of a slow start with VCARB. A lot of pressure, Laz, on Daniel Ricciardo to perform in his home country after kind of a slow start for the team in its entirety.
I think there's a huge amount of Daniel Ricciardo. I think there's a huge amount of pressure on Daniel Ricciardo right now. He's going to have to rise up to it, because at the moment, you know, even if you take away the mistakes and the unfortunate things that have happened in races, Yuki Tsunoda's looked like the faster of the two drivers. And this is a season where if Ricciardo wants to make that step up to Red Bull to potentially replace Sergio Perez, or who knows what might happen with Max Verstappen, but yeah, basically make that step to Red Bull, then he's got to perform. And at the moment, he's not really doing it. So we're two races in. There's a lot of time to go. But I feel like this is a race that he kind of, I mean, he obviously loves it. It's his home race. But I remember when he used to, I think when he first made the move to Renault, and also a little bit when he'd been at Red Bull, the amount of media that he had to do beforehand, the amount of sponsor obligations he had to do, just everything. He was getting pulled in every direction before the race. And it got to a point where he said, actually, I need to have a bit more time for myself. I need to be able to focus on this weekend, because it is exhausting, you know. Plus, obviously, he's from here, but he doesn't live here, so he deals with the time change like everyone else. So hopefully his schedule away from the racetrack isn't too hectic going into this weekend, so he can get his head in the right place. I feel like there's still that potential inside Daniel Ricciardo to perform and rise to that pressure, but I feel like he does need to do it in the next few races to not have this narrative start to build that, you know, Tsunoda's the better of the two drivers or the faster of the two drivers, and therefore, you know, Ricciardo isn't the right man to move up to Red Bull. So now is the time at his home race to put an end to it. It's an interesting race, and that I feel like a lot happens here a lot of the time. So a little bit of experience can go a long way, and he's got plenty of that. So yeah, hopefully he'll be able to draw on that, not get too distracted going into it, and get the result he needs to kickstart a season.
I want to talk. Do you have an A?
Yeah, I was just going to add to all of that. I completely agree with what Lawrence said. I think as well, the interesting thing that Ricciardo's got now is, in terms of, and I hate using the word excuses, because I don't think he's never really been one who uses like excuses in the same way, but you have this whole narrative around Ricciardo about him replacing Perez next year. And I think that has turned the screws up around everything with Ricciardo. Last year, he could say, I came in late, et cetera, et cetera. I think that the fascinating thing is that if you look at social media over the past 2 weeks, the backlash against Ricciardo from his fans has been huge. You know, people saying you're washed up and all these things. And I think that, more than anything, I think will be something that he's aware of and that will, you know, that will play on his mind and stuff like that. And we've seen with Ricciardo before, you know, he can take stuff like that very, very personally. So I think Lawrence is completely right. You know, he needs to kind of stamp that out quickly, get back on the horse. What was the horse called he had in Austin? Maybe you can borrow that.
Horsey McHorseface, I think.
Horsey McHorseface, that was it. But yeah, I think it's a really fascinating situation because I think if you look at that RB team as well, a lot of people in the paddock, maybe fairly, think that team's been set up more in line with what he wanted. You know, obviously the deal that came in, you know, there's a lot of the guys that work with him were involved in that deal, etc. So I think, yeah, there's a lot of things there that you can kind of poke holes in with Ricciardo. And you know, I think as a podcast, we've always been big fans of his. And I think that it would be a shame if we saw another spiral like he had with McLaren, because that was difficult to watch. But also, like, the whole point of this comeback that he had was kind of like, oh, well, Ricciardo's back now, and you thought the end point would be this, like, return to Red Bull. If he keeps having these weekends where he's completely outperformed by Tsunoda, I think we'll stop talking about that pretty quickly, because I don't think Red Bull aren't going to hang around and be like, oh yeah, we'll take this guy now. It's not, you know, they don't care about the story being great or not. You know, if he's not performing, he won't get it. So, yeah, fascinating so early in the season that we're already talking about kind of a crucial couple of races for him.
I don't mean to laugh, but I do have to apologize. I don't think I used English words when you wanted to add. I saw you lift your finger that you maybe had, and I do have a.
I thought I had said something, but to be honest, it's so early here that I thought I could have been speaking like Klingon or something, and I wouldn't know the difference.
It's not early here, so I don't have an excuse. I want to talk about Haas real quick because I feel like we should give Haas a few flowers early on this season. They've got some pace to them. Better start than we were expecting, probably, at this point. What are your expectations, Laz, in Australia?
Hopefully more the same, because you're right. The car is way faster than any of us gave it credit for in preseason testing and going into the season. And obviously, with Gunther leaving over the winter, there are big question marks about, you know, can you succeed with that model? Like, will they just find that they end up in this developmental cul-de-sac that they seem to have got into at the end of last year? You know, what is next for this team? You know, are they just going to fade away and then be bought up by someone? But to be fair, they've come out fighting and they've got a solid car. The main objective with this car was to be able to race it. Now, that sounds a bit absurd. It's a racing car. But the idea being that previously it would just eat its tires, and no matter where you qualified it, so you could put it in the top 10, it would just inevitably go backwards in the race. They don't have that problem this year. So that is a huge step forward. So some of that outright pace that Nico Hülkenberg especially seems to be able to get out of the car in qualifying can then be capitalized on in the race. So it's a good start. I mean, it was only 1 point in Jeddah, but right now in that back half of the field, 1 point is like gold dust. It really is, because you've got the top five teams, Red Bull long way ahead, Ferrari, Mercedes, McLaren, Aston Martin, and then everybody else is that step behind. And I think to break into that top 10 for any of those teams further back at this stage, it's going to be tricky. It's going to rely on a little bit of something going wrong elsewhere. Of course, Lance Stroll crashed out in Jeddah, which freed up a spot in that top 10. So if they're there or thereabouts picking up points at this stage of season, that could be incredibly valuable going forward. And I think, yeah, hats off to the people at that team, because, you know, I was included in people that had perhaps written off the way that they were running that team, you know, trying to have a design office in Maranello while doing a huge amount of other car kind of, you know, the vehicle dynamics and stuff in Banbury, trying to marry the two together while having it built by Dallara. You know, it seems like such a messy business model. And I think it still is. I still don't think that's the way you'd want to operate an F1 team. And Ayo Komatsu kind of said that straight away when he came in, but it's what they've got. And it's whether they can succeed with what they've got and do better than last year with what they've got. And Komatsu said from the very start they absolutely can, and so far he's been proven right. So yeah, fair play to them for addressing the clear issues they had with last year's car and coming out fighting at the start of this year.
I want to bring up a quick quote from Gunther Steiner, because we had him on the podcast here and Unlapped after he parted ways with Haas. And we asked him, would you ever return to being a team principal? Would you ever return to Formula One? He's kind of non-committal. And I actually, correct me if I'm wrong, he kind of said no. Like, I don't think that I'd go back to it at this stage of my life. Well, someone recently, time heals all, someone recently asked him if he'd return to F1. And he said, I would come back to F1 in the future, but it needs to be the right project done right. If you were a betting man, Nathaniel Saunders, which project could that potentially be?
Yeah, I saw that quote and I was trying to think the same thing, you know, because the problem with Formula One that Gunther has is there's not many projects. You know, there's only a certain amount of teams. And you look at, there's one very obvious project that is in dire need of somebody, and that's Alpine. And I think you would stay away from that if you were smart. You'd say, I don't want anything to do with that team. But also, I still think that Gunther Steiner's view on that is unchanged. I think that he's, you know, what he suggested to us in the pod was he would get involved, you know, on a less hands-on level. You know, maybe, you know, you can imagine being an advisor or, you know,
consultant,
taking that kind of role on with the team. And yeah, I can't see him fitting in as a team boss in the conventional sense. He'll never have the same thing with Haas again. But it's quite interesting, isn't it? Because I think, you know, just on a name basis alone, you wonder if any teams would be like, well, having Gunther here wouldn't be bad for sponsors, for, you know, for just general vibe around the team. And I think it's quite telling. You know, we always joke in Formula One that, you know, when journalists leave, they'll have like a big retirement do, or, you know, a big leaving do. And then the next year, they're like, oh, I'm coming back, by the way, for the Spanish Grand Prix. I've picked up some work. Like, no one can ever stay away from Formula One. It, like, you know, it just hooks you back in. And yeah, I think he'll come back at some point. I've got to say as well, from that interview, that was on F1.com. He's the new column he's doing. He was, to go back to the point about how well Komatsu and Haas are doing in his absence, it's actually very refreshingly honest from Steiner. He said he probably could have left Haas earlier, probably should have left Haas earlier than he did. And I think, you know, I've always thought with Steiner, that's one of his best qualities, is the fact that he does just kind of, you know, he doesn't try, and there's no airs and graces. He just kind of says how it is. And from speaking to people at Haas at the start of the year, I think that the fact they've started well has made people realize, oh, like when he left, it did seem very doom and gloom. Everyone was like, this is the end of the team, blah, blah, blah. But I think actually Steiner probably got to a point where, you know, he had kind of outgrown that team. And I, you know, the team had obviously hit a bit of a rut performance wise. So yeah, I'd love to see him come back to Formula One, but I just don't see him being a conventional team boss, unless you'd have to be desperate to go to Alpine right now. I mean, maybe Lawrence thinks differently. Maybe that's an exciting challenge for someone, but if you're Gunther Steiner, you don't need anything to do with that whole project. And there's obviously other teams, but that's the most obvious one that's in need of somebody to come in with, you know, real F1 experience, and kind of guide the ship, you know, a little bit. But yeah, how would you bring him into something like that? And how effective could he be if he wasn't on a hands-on role? It's kind of a difficult one to know without seeing it in action. So I can't see him coming back anytime soon, but it's been fun. I caught up with him in the paddock in Bahrain. And it was weird just seeing him with a mic and without team kit on, because he looked like he was lost. And he was kind of laughing, looking around at all these journalists coming up to him, asking him questions. So I think deep down he misses it. And I think he wants to get back into the competitive flow of it in some way.
I'm glad you mentioned Alpine, because Australia last year was an absolute disaster. I think that's a nice way to put it. And maybe that's when things kind of unraveled for Otmar Szafnauer as team principal. When you look at things, obviously this season, Laz, surely they can't have the wreckage that they did a season ago in Australia. Like, it's got to be a better result this time around, right?
It can't be much worse, can it? Because they had two cars in the points and they both took each other out. So, yeah, it doesn't get a huge amount worse than that, especially for a team right now where points seem like seem very, very unrealistic, just given where they've been the first two races. But I think with Alpine, you know, there is an element of the only way they can go forward is up from where they started. And I suspect they will do. You know, there's still good people there. I don't think they're going to achieve their objectives, which is quite clearly to be part of that front running pack anytime soon. That they'll edge closer to it, I think. But this weekend in Melbourne, it's so often a messy race, isn't it? I mean, we saw that last year with the red flag right at the end and the restarts and everything going wrong. There is a possibility that a team like Alpine, even if you start the season badly, just being there at the end of the race can mean you get points. So both the drivers will no doubt not need reminding of what happened last year. But I think a smart team principal or sporting director would just make clear that, look, if we do get into a situation where points are possible, work together, guys, you know, and that's probably quite hard for Esteban and Pierre to do at times, given their background and the intensity of their rivalry, which, by the way, can be a good thing as well within a team, to have two teammates pushing the team along, both desperately wanting to beat each other. You know, it can be a very positive thing for a team, but there are occasions where you just want them to, you know, get in line and get across the finish line. So, yeah, I guess that's the only objective that Alpine will have going into this weekend. And then the updates, you know, the big updates and pushing forward, I guess we'll have to wait maybe a couple of rounds before they start to get really on top of the issues which they discovered in Bahrain testing.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I've enjoyed watching the sunrise behind you and your background, Laz, get brighter and brighter as the morning.
It is, honestly, the sunrises here are stunning. There's two things about Melbourne which are great. Sunrises and the coffee, which I haven't had a coffee yet. You might be able to tell by my ramblings. But yeah, I'll be heading out there as soon as it's done to get a coffee and enjoy the sunrise. It's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. All right, well, let's get you to the coffee. We're going to give you our predictions. Jetta prediction saw me pick up 2 points. By predicting the Red Bull 1-2, easy enough. Laz, you got another point by predicting Leclerc to finish in that third spot. So Laz currently leads 4 points on the season. Katie's in second with 3 points. Nate Saunders, you have 2 points. Okay,
oh, wow.
So Nate, I will allow you to give us your top three first.
It's never good going first because you kind of have to guess a little bit. I'm going to go Max, Sergio. And we talked about it earlier. I'm all in. Oscar Piastri, third.
I dig it. Okay. I know. The 1-2 is so boring, but I actually want to win this year. So I'm going to go Max, Sergio, and I'm going to give Sainz a bounce back after the appendectomy. How about that?
Nice.
Laz, what say you?
Yeah, that's a good shout. I'm going to go Max, Charles Leclerc, Carlos Sainz. So double for a podium. Something happens to Perez. Perez has had a couple of bad races here in the past, isn't he? Where just sometimes this is where the start of the downfall. But yeah, we'll see. Again, I always feel like I'm being so mean to Sergio by not putting him in the top three. Like, if I'm completely honest, probably Max Sergio is a very good bet. But yeah, considering you guys have taken that already, I feel like I've got to do something different.
Thing is as well, I went super, super risky with Piastri. So I had to go safe with the 1-2. Otherwise, I'd have done similar. You know, I put a Ferrari,
I'd
have been like,
gamble
yeah.
At this point.
Yeah, it's a risk game, especially where number one is so obvious.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, hey, real quick. Are you guys March Madness gurus? Do you fill out brackets? I don't want to be condescending. You know about brackets, right?
Gurus is a very American strong word, thing. Katie. I have a bracket. But I wouldn't call myself a guru in any stretch.
Well, nobody's a guru, really. I mean,
no, I have a lead.
I'd like to say that I have a 100% record. So I entered one bracket last year, had no idea what I was doing, just picked the names that I thought were funny. And then before I knew it, I'd somehow won it by, like, I don't know, a point or something, or however it works. But I might retire now with a 100% record.
So you won your bracket, but you didn't get it 100% right, because had you would have made like $3 billion and you wouldn't be on this podcast with us.
Although he wouldn't either, because we didn't buy into it either. So that would have been doubly cool. But I have to remind Lawrence, and I can send the link to Katie and to our producer Zach. Hoops, I did it again. Is my bracket? Is my league? And yeah, I've got Kentucky winning the whole thing because I like Kentucky.
What?
And fried chicken.
You've got,
but also, I told you guys, I had a great theory for Purdue. They're called the Boilermakers.
Purdue.
All I know about Purdue is that's where Neil Armstrong went to college. That's all I know about it. And I think that's right. Anyway,
Okay.
He went to college somewhere.
You didn't pick them to win?
No, because they're the Boilermakers, and my boiler in the UK has not been working recently, so I couldn't morally pick a team called the Boilermakers to win it all. I got them through the semifinals, the final four, or whatever it's called.
It's reasons like that. People who choose based on that, they're the ones who win their brackets.
Yeah.
People who actually think they know much about college hoops, they cover it, they actually read into the analytics. Like when they make those picks, those people are the last ones that are going to win it.
Yeah. All we had was the two team names, their points scored, like average, points against average, and then something else. And you just pick based on that or the name.
Yeah. My family, do a challenge, and my sister-in-law's, it never fails. One of my two sister-in-laws always wins, and they pick purely based on mascot and color.
Nice. That's the best way
to do it. They like the uniform colors.
It's a lot of fun. Americans have a great way of just making every sport like 10 times better around what's happening. I think it's great. Lawrence is sat in silence now. Just looking.
Like, I'm thinking what we could do with F1 to make it 10 times better, because that's exactly what we need right now.
Yeah. Force Max to retire.
On that note, cheers to the both of you. Have so much fun in Australia. Get some good coffee. Can't wait for the race, and we'll break it all down when we come back next week on Unlapped. Great to see you both.